Melissa Harris-Perry. It's good to have you with us here on The Takeaway. The midterm elections are just about 200 days away, and in many states, the primaries are already in full swing. But even as the machinery of American democracy is warming up for the big fall contests, many Americans are expressing doubt rather than enthusiasm about our system. Earlier this year, a poll conducted by ABC News found that only 20% of Americans feel confident in our country's election systems. And it's a concern expressed by voters from both parties. Now, here's some of what you told us about how you're feeling about the American election system.
Hi, this is Kim from Tampa. I don't trust either side, Democrat or Republican, to run a fair election. They're both out for the same cause, two faces on the same coin.
My name is Paul. I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Yes, I do believe that prior to the last few years, the system was working well until the Republicans started messing things up. I'm an independent voter. I vote for both parties, but I am highly disappointed with Republican legislators and the leadership that keeps spreading rumors and lies and destroying the system that we have relied upon and seeding the mistrust.
Hello, my name is Esther Kutnick, and I am calling from San Francisco, California. I am very worried about the next two national elections, 2022 and 2024. Most Republican states have passed draconian laws restricting access to voting, and this is likely to affect the outcome of our national election. Why on earth would it be a crime to give water to someone waiting in a long line to vote?
Now, what Esther is referring to there is Georgia's SB 202, which was signed into law last March. And to be clear, the legislation does not criminalize individuals who provide water for those waiting to vote. It does, however, bar political organizations from offering voters those kinds of relief or comfort items, like water or snacks. Now, there may be plenty of reason to oppose even this restriction. And it certainly seems to me it's important to ask why we so readily accept the reality that casting a ballot will likely require standing in long lines. But it also matters to refute the idea that individual citizens can no longer offer each other a bottle of water. Because the harder it gets to separate fact from fiction, the more difficult it becomes to trust the system, to trust one another, and to trust the outcome of elections. In 2020, we witnessed the President of the United States sow the seeds of democracy eroding mistrust in the fertile ground of Georgia, when he made false claims about corruption and voter fraud. President Trump even called Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and appeared to pressure him to alter Georgia's election results. And as election denial claims became increasingly incendiary in January of 2021, the chief operating officer of the Georgia Secretary of State, Gabriel Sterling, issued a stern warning.
It has all gone too far. This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this.
Rather than stop, the election denial culminated in a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th, in an attempt to disrupt the formal certification of the 2020 election results. So now, as we approach the 2022 midterms, what is the state of our election system? And just how free and fair are our elections in Georgia and beyond? With me now is Gabriel Sterling, Chief Operating Officer and Interim Deputy Secretary in the Office of the Georgia Secretary of State. Gabe, welcome back to the show.
Good to talk to you, Melissa.
So let's just start with the big question. Did what happened in 2020 erode the sense of trust in the electoral process in Georgia?
I think there's no doubt that that happened in 2020. But in this state, it happened in 2018 as well. So we've had a nice long litany of this. And then if you look at the United States, you see the polling that showed Republicans, about 60% think the election was stolen and there's something wrong in 2020. A similar poll in 2021 showed 61% of Democrats think 2016, the Russians stole the elections for Hillary. So both sides, as you mentioned in your intro, have sort of grabbed a hold of this for fundraising purposes because, let's face it, it's sexy. It's a great thing to fundraise off of to say the other sides are evil people and they're stealing your vote.
Okay, so I want to walk through this a little bit. I do want to make sure that I understand what you're saying, because Hillary Clinton did not win the election in 2016.
Right.
Right, okay. So no,
the Democrats, 61% believe Russians stole it for Donald Trump. My fault.
Oh, I see. So the sense that she had, in fact, won it relative, correct, had it been a free and fair. Got it. Just wanted to be certain we were clear about that. So I actually see a challenge here, right? And I want to kind of walk through this with you, because it does seem to me that there are, you know, reasonable arguments to be made about whether or not any given procedure makes an election sort of more reasonable, more fair, more accessible. So whether it's voter ID or whether it is the location of polling places, and at the same time, raising those concerns is what I hear you saying is that raising those concerns seems to also be part of a general erosion of trust. Am I understanding you correctly?
Not completely, but that's a close enough to it. I mean, the reality is in Georgia, we've been dealing with lawsuits now on top of lawsuits on top of lawsuits. We have one that started this week again. It was originally filed in 2018. And we're dealing with another one that was filed in 2017. And here's the reality in Georgia. It is really easy to register, and it is really easy to vote no matter who you are in the state. And people claiming otherwise are doing it for their own political purposes.
And what are those political purposes? I mean, I have to say, you know, for all of the very important critiques I think we bring to the 2020 election cycle, and then obviously what happened in January of 2021, it's also true that on both sides of the aisle, we had record turnout in this country.
And that's partially driven by going to the base. And the main thing that I think both sides have learned from this is it really does drive the base, and it really drives money. It goes back to everything. If you ever want to ask a question and get to the base of it, what's the usual answer? Money. Mm-hmm. I mean, Donald Trump has raised hundreds of millions of dollars on this. Stacey Abrams has raised, you know, millions and millions in this state. Raphael Warnock has got a record haul now of $26 million in his accounts, based in large part on some of these same things that just simply aren't true. And it's for someone like me. Yeah, I'm a Republican. I get that. But I care about the system working and people having faith in it and watching both sides continue to, for their own political benefit, basically weaponizing election administration is terrible long term, because one of my progressive friends has a line that I steal very often is the reason we have ballots is so we can avoid bullets. But mm-hmm. If you keep on telling people ballots don't count, what's the next logical step?
Yeah. Okay. So I've been a political scientist 25 years, and I am with you on the system. Let's have our fights in the political arena. Let's have our fights with words and ideas. So ballots over bullets for sure. So let's walk through what the system in Georgia actually looks like. So, you know, you just said, all right, it's actually pretty easy to register and to vote in this state. Walk us through from your vantage point inside of this system. What are the basic rules? Let's say I'm moving to Georgia. I'm not, but let's say I'm moving to Georgia. Okay. You know, what? And I want to become a voter. What do I do?
Well, normally when you move anywhere and you're like, you know, a grown up, you go and get a new driver's license. In the state of Georgia, and this is implemented under then Secretary Kemp, now Governor Kemp, you automatically get registered to vote. And it's not an opt-in system. You have to say, no, don't register me. And if you don't say that, you're going to get registered to vote in this state, which is why we're at over 95% of our eligible people are registered in this state. And it also, it updates your voter registration when you move inside the state. It's very, like I said, it's extremely easy to register here. We also have online voter registration that was also input under then Secretary Kemp, now Governor Kemp. So you can go online, use an older driver's license, and you can become a registered voter. It is very simple. Now, one of the things that everybody in the country has to do now, with the exception of a couple of states that are still not doing it, is Homeland Security has required all of us to move to the real ID system. If you want to get on a plane, you have to have a real ID. And when you do that, you're showing up with all those pain in the butt documents, your birth certificate, your marriage certificate, all those things to prove you're a citizen and prove you are who you say you are. So that is what, when we have coordinated with our Department of Driver Services, or the DMV, as most people would call it in most states, we get automatic updates literally every day that goes to county dashboards, and the counties look at those and they accept them and they go into the voter rolls, or they accept the changes and they go into the voter rolls. So it is, like I said, wildly easy. And something
but,
like
so, so, but let yeah. me ask just so so It probably would be for me. I'm a driver. I'd go, I'd get a new driver's license, I'd become part of the system. But what if I bring my elderly parent with me and they don't drive? Or maybe, you know, I'm moving from a state where there's really great public transit and I'm a, you know, working adult, but I've never had to have a driver's license. What about all of the other folks who, for a variety of reasons, whether it's disability or age or simply not being a driver, don't end up in that system?
We have a free ID system for anybody who falls into those categories. Right now in our state, 97% of the people on our voter rolls have either the free ID or a driver's license. We also allow, as defined under the Help America Vote Act, I believe there's 16 or 17 other forms of ID that you can bring to register to vote on paper, and you can mail it in. And then you have to still prove who you are. We can move to, if you haven't had a valid ID or nobody's looked at it, you go to MIDR status, which means you're missing ID. So when you go up, show up to vote the first time, you can take one of those, any 16 forms of ID to show who you are. And then at that point, you're off of the MIDR status. You just have to show your ID like anybody else would. And it's not just a driver's license. It can be any government issued ID. It can be an expired driver's license. It can be any of those kind of things.
Okay, so you're talking about some voter ID laws that have been in place. But in response to the new voting law the Georgia Republicans passed and signed last year, the DOJ is suing Georgia and saying that this bill that was adopted has the purpose of denying or abridging Black citizens equal access to the political process. Why is the DOJ suing if, as you're saying, there aren't issues with your state's new voting law?
Well, this is not a new law. This has been the law in the state for nearly two decades, and we've won in court several times on it. The DOJ is doing it, and I hate to say this, for politics, because here's the reality. It is much, much harder to register and vote in New York than it is in Georgia. In New York, you only now have 9 days of early voting. We have 17 days of mandatory voting, which was expanded in the Election Integrity Act, SB 202. We also have no excuse absentee, which was passed in 2005, by a Republican legislature and signed by then governor and then future agricultural secretary for Trump, Sonny Perdue. And we still have no excuse absentee. In New York, there's like five different reasons if you're going to be out, if you're going to be sick, or if you're incarcerated, and a few other things. So it is easier to register and vote in Georgia than it is in the state of New York.
All right. So let me ask this, because, you know, you got me kind of going on this. All right. You know, it's not so hard to register. And I think we could fight around the margins, or we could argue around the margins of those who might still be left out. But let me just ask this. If this has been the law for such a long time, if this has been the system, then why the need for SB 202? Why the need for that Election Integrity Act if elections have been working pretty well in Georgia?
Well, there's two reasons for it, really. And what people outside the state didn't really maybe know or understand is in 2020, we had obviously a perfect storm of things that happened. We had the thing that everybody had to deal with, which was COVID. And, you know, the loss of poll workers and the rest of those kind of situations because they were mainly elderly. But we also, for the first time in 20 years, had a brand new voting system that was deployed statewide. And it involved paper ballots. And no matter what happened, the outcome of the election wouldn't have mattered. There was going to be a bill in 2021 to address things we learned from the rush and onslaught of absentee ballots and the things we learned from the new system. Because the reality we were dealing with was we normally had 5% people vote by absentee, and it went up to about 50% during that period of time. And we were going to learn from those things. And one of the things that people have attacked, which are really good for election administration, it's the same thing in New York and Florida, is an absentee ballot request deadline. Before, there wasn't really one in law, and people could request all the way up to the Friday before election. And what we discovered was that this is just one aspect, but I'm telling you some of the rationales behind
sure.
it.
Sure, yeah.
Is that if you've requested your ballot 10 or more days before the election, 92% of those people voted those ballots. If you requested it inside the 10-day window, they went down to like 58%, I believe. So it's really about protecting the franchise of people. And another one that has been sort of a thing of consternation was the provisional voting that we had for years. What we were seeing was activists, if you go to the wrong polling place, you're not supposed to vote there. And that's on election day. During early voting, the 17 days, you can go anywhere in your county and vote. But on election day, you need to go to your polling place because that's how the system is built. And what was happening is activists were standing outside going, no, no, even if you weren't in the right place, go back in there and demand your provisional vote, which if they have the rest of the day, they can go to their place normally. Not everybody can. So that's why we have a 2-hour window at the end where you can stay and vote a provisional. But if you vote there, you can only vote in the statewide elections, and you're disenfranchised from the ones at the bottom of the city council, the state house, the state senate, the county commission. And we think all those are important. So from our point of view, a lot of the things were necessary and good election administration. And one of the big ones was interesting was the absentee ballot drop boxes, which were a bone of contention for many people. There was people in this state that wanted to get rid of them altogether, outlaw them, or keep them outlawed, because before the passage of SB 202, drop boxes were never contemplated in law. They were an emergency thing allowed by the governor's executive powers and the president's powers for a health emergency and following the CDC guidelines. So there was a group of Republicans who wanted to take them away. Absolutely. There was another group of Republicans that wanted to keep them, and they did what they do in politics. They compromised. They kept them, but now they're in secure areas and only available during business hours. I didn't write the law. I would have written it, made it more expansive, but they didn't exist before. And if there was a move to get rid of them altogether.
All right. So Gabe, when I listen to you, you sound like a good administrator, and I don't mean this in any way bad. I mean this in a really good way. Like, you sound like a good bureaucrat.
Avoid the word bureaucrat and you're fine. So.
Right. Like, here are the rules. Here's how it works. You know, I might disagree with some of them, but let me implement these rules. So let me ask this. Should folks who are in charge of elections, people like you, people like other secretaries of state around, people who are in Secretary of State's office and who are elected as Secretary of State, not in fact be elected officials, but nonpartisan folks who are maybe appointed through other sorts of means? I mean, I guess I'm wondering if part of the skepticism comes from this kind of baked-in skepticism we have to believe that the other side, the other party, is simply always lying to us.
There is a terrible thing when it comes to the lying part. There was a great article in The Atlantic this week called Why the Last 10 Years Have Been the Stupidest. So I recommend that to everybody if you haven't read it yet. And it goes into some of that. But I, for one, have never been a believer in that nonpartisan people, human beings, exist, because we all have our own viewpoints. And no matter how much we try to, you know, assuage them. And I think being honest about it, I think one of the things that gave me so much credibility during a lot of this was I said, yep, I'm a Republican. And this all happened this way. And the problem we do have is that we've now otherized everybody. I give talks now sometimes. And one of the things that we need to get away from is the Democrat over there, the Republican over there, the opposite of me, is not the enemy. He is my neighbor with a different opinion. And if we start trying to make rules to get around that, I think we're ignoring the reality of it. I mean, look in Ohio, where they've tried to do the nonpartisan board to draw their districts. They're getting sued left and right. And because that's what's always going to happen, because there's always going to be human beings have their own partisanship, even if they having not any partisanship is still kind of a partisanship, not making decisions, still making a decision. So it's difficult to do those kind of things, but I can understand people's underlying fear about that. But I like elected officials because you can hold them accountable. And I don't like bureaucrats, because it's much more difficult to hold them accountable.
So if you did have a magic wand and could implement, maybe it's a limited magic wand, it could only implement maybe two or three things that you believe would help voters to more fully trust the system and to want to participate in the democratic system, what might be those two or three things?
Oh, wow. If I was king for a day, I'd never get to be. There's three main things. One, if there was a way we could make it mandatory for everybody to serve at least one election cycle as a poll worker, and they would see and understand the mechanics, I think that would go a very long way. I think having mandatory audits to prove that the machines counted the way they're supposed to at the end, not the Arizona stuff, but the stuff we do by law in Georgia, they do in Colorado, you bring in both parties, you look at the things, and you make nearly every process be observable or governed by a bipartisan board. And you have to get buy-in from the parties for that to work. And the last one is a long-term one, which I will never get because it's unconstitutional as heck, which is if you ever run for office for state house or state senate or Congress or anything higher, you have to have served at least one term in a city council, school board, or county commission, because there people hold you accountable. You have to look people in the eye. They see you at the grocery store, they see you at church, and you can't hide behind those other people. So I think it's just important that we have people who are willing to compromise and listen. Listening is the biggest thing. And if I could make a lot of people listen, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Gabriel Sterling, I appreciate that if you were king for a day, you would use your kingship to strengthen democracy. Thank you for joining us today. Gabriel Sterling, Chief Operating Officer and Interim Deputy Secretary in the Office of the Georgia Secretary of State.
Thank you, Melissa.
Okay, let's hear from some of you out there about how you're feeling about our election system.
Hi, my name's Leah, and I'm calling from Manhattan. And I'm wondering if the question is a joke. How are elections in this country free and fair when voting rights are consistently chipped away at, access is limited, and when we can make a federal holiday out of the fake birthday of a religious icon, but not voting day?
Hi, my name is Sophia. I'm calling from Miami. I don't think that we will have free and fair elections because of all the election laws that have been implemented by red state and legislators there to minimize voting access by eliminating drop-off boxes, early voting, easy voter registration requiring excessive documentation or identification and so on. So I think the midterms are already stacked. And that it's going to affect the presidential election, too.
Hi, this is Wayne. I'm in Fairfield, California. I'm pretty confident in free and fair elections. I don't think that there's been a problem. I think that the fact that the Republican Party has tried to throw shade on our election system damages our democracy. Is it perfect? No. But as the audit in Arizona recently showed, there were 9 cases of fraud out of 3.4 million people. It's rare. It doesn't impact the outcome of elections. I think selling people on the fact that elections are suspect damages our society at its core.
Hi, this is Ingrid from Los Angeles in California. Going into the midterm elections fills me with dread. I'm very confident that in California, access to election polls is fair and free. However, I know that especially some of the southern states have made it much more difficult for people to have access to voting and also have changed certain rules that might allow them to overturn the election results in their state. That leaves me truly with dread because when I moved to the United States, I was in the belief that this is the best democracy in the world. Well, I do not believe that anymore.
This is The Takeaway. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to comment on any story or give us your thoughts on any topic.
Llámanos al 877-869-8253.
Also, we're on Facebook and Twitter at The Takeaway. Let us know what you think, and thanks for listening.